sorry, can we just go back a minute? The meeting in Chicago, Kim Abstracts came close to buying Dialogue, or...
That's not correct.
Had a chance to do it?
Martha Williams, University of Chicago, a very important female in this whole field. She was one of the members of the original group of database users that was formed back in the 60s, come here every 6 months to tell us what and how to do, what they needed, what users needed, what they wanted, mm-hmm. and us to tell them what we're doing. Okay. Martha went to the University of Illinois, and she was one of the best in the field of the chemical information, and she was editor for the annual reviews of chemical information, or scientific and technical information. And Martha, when she heard the Dialogue was up for sale, called all the Federation members together and said, do we want to go together to buy Dialogue? It was up for sale.
To Enphase Center.
To the members of Enphase.
Of Enphase, uh-huh.
Yeah. And none of them, yeah, maybe. How much do they want? 12 million? 60 million? Somebody had heard different things. Do we want to make an offer? Can we get 12 million to buy Dialogue? And I think we got the fact was that they wouldn't take less than $60 million at the time to buy it, and we, no one, even including Asia. The fact is, I knew what we were doing, and I knew we were gunning for online, and why buy Dialogue when we were developing our own capabilities? We felt we had to protect distribution. Actually, only an online system is all it is a communication device. And we were supplementing our printed versions of shipping and mailing printed by setting up a network of computers to serve online. Mm-hmm. And so developing our own would give us this capability in the future, which it has, and not have to go through third-party like Dialogue or SDC.
Mm-hmm. Now, when was this meeting in Chicago? I've forgotten what year.
I think it was 76.
76. And so you all were already headed thoroughly in your research program to develop an online system that ultimately became CAS Online.
We had made the decision to get online as fast as we could. And the board wanted us to, and we wanted to, but we couldn't do it everything. Our platter was too full, and we had to make a decision how much we could do over the next 5 years to digest all the primary journals, ACS, or do our online work. And so I knew this when I went to the meeting in Chicago, and I didn't dare tell the other Federation members then what we were doing, because I would have, well, it would have been inappropriate. And so we couldn't get the members together to work together to even buy it. It wouldn't have even gone to the board to buy it.
The other members didn't look at the deep pockets guy from CAS and say, why don't you do this?
That's your analysis is pretty good. They wanted CAS. We were the biggest at the time. Our budgets were more than anybody else's. And they didn't say deep pockets, because under ACS charter and bylaws, we are a nonprofit, and therefore didn't. Under the rules of the Internal Revenue Service of the United States, we couldn't develop funds greater than an annual budget. You're not familiar with that policy, but IRS doesn't want nonprofits to have a fund greater than an annual budget.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now back to the Dialogue suit. This is 83, 84, right? Is it? I thought the suit was over the fact that when CAS went online, that you were going to be a sole provider, and we're going to cut Dialogue out of. Is that not what the suit was about? And Leo, you remember it being about the public nature, the fact that CAS had gotten federal government funding. Can you straighten us out in all of this confusion?
Dialogue people, of course, said that this was developed by government money in our 65 through 75 budgets. That was for our research and development only. And it's true, we were, and we had to make it available under our contracts to the United States government for their use. This is true. And we did. We offered it to Food and Drug and EPA and others.
For free?
Yeah, to pay for just a single copy of the software required that they might want, need to use for partial systems. So that was always true, and it's been ruled since that we should do that in case the federal government wanted to use our systems and software. Dialogue said that we restricted when we went on because we weren't online. We weren't sure of how well we could compete to make the money necessary to pay for our online software development to continue to develop with the other online services in the world. There was this French, there was the British, there was the Japanese, there wasn't any in Germany at the time. But I went to the board of directors at a meeting in 1982 and said, we're going to put abstracts up online. They had been leasing our tapes for our developing chemical abstract registry and all of our other services. But the abstracts had never been put up online. And so we got the board to approve of our retaining this. Now, that was a big argument among a lot of our users, some of the people with Exxon and other companies. 40 of the major chemical companies wanted us to give it to Dialogue so that they could get their abstracts directly from Dialogue rather than from us. And we weren't certain whether we could make it work effectively, and so we got restricted use of the abstracts. We got board approval not to give tapes of abstract to Dialogue or anyone else until I offered 10-year period. I said in 8 to 10-year period, if we could make sure that CAS generated revenue from our online services from the abstracts. We went back 2 years in some of the abstracts, getting them up online. And that we then could consider the possibility of making it available to the other online vendors, like Dialogue. We argued a lot of times at ACS meetings about this. Were we being a monopoly and controlling it? And we offered, well, it was a sad day, and it didn't come to a stage of suit until later, 83, 84.
Mm-hmm.
That Dialogue got mad. We had been auditing their books, and they had been cheating us on revenue. And our auditors that went out there tried to prove that to them, and they contended they didn't owe us this money. And this was our countersuit, that they had been unfair in giving us the revenue that we generated. They had put together some files, this is what amounts to, and they didn't give us the revenue of those combined database for searching like subject indexing. So you could go to biological or physics abstracts. And so they weren't giving us any of that revenue. And that was our countersuit to them. They said that $50 million is what they wanted to sue us for. We're not giving the abstracts tapes. And that we were stopping competition. Was the first part of the suit, and that's what we had testimony on. We spent over $2 million in that case before it was settled, and And we countersued them for not giving us the correct amount of revenue generated from the index tapes that they were combining. They said they weren't obligated to do it. Well, that really was the two basic points. One, they wanted our abstracts online, and we were limiting them because of our tapes had been developed. The R&D had been developed by government money. Make sure you understand clearly that all government contracts except service grants from NSF had been for the R&D work here. None of it, we were very, very careful about this. Physics abstracts under the American Physical Society had gotten in trouble with this. We knew it back in the 50s that they had. And so we kept very careful accounting of all the work that went into the regular, normal, routine work of developing and manufacturing of processing our services were paid by CACS. But the R&D was 50% paid by CAS. 50% was paid for out of the NSF. We offered to pay half of the R&D going into the development of the system. But Dialogue said, because you use 50% of the money of the NSF, public funding, that they were able to get all of our manufacturing costs. Mm-hmm. Well, they aren't. The ACS owns those abstracts, and we don't have to give them that.
Well, now, someplace I saw a description of this first grant that it was for the purposes of, quote, catching up with that abstracting.
That was the second. We never didn't discuss that adequately. The first grant was for chemical titles development.
Right.
Next proposition, which they approved of, was about $150,000 to catch up with the fifth collective index. And we got NSF to support us. We didn't have the funds then to spend to catch up. And as I said, we were actually 1956 was the last year for the fifth collective index. It was a 10-year period. And we hadn't even started when I took over in 58. And I had to catch up the 18. It was taking us 22 months to do 12 months worth of work. So I had to put most of my staff on to catching up with our abstract issues as close as we could to. And then I wanted to start, I had to get started our 50 Sentinel Index, which we were late in getting started. We didn't get it started until about 1960, and it was to cover the period of actually 1956. So we're 4 months behind time on our fifth collective index, and I asked NSF to get the money we needed, and $150,000, I believe, is what it was, maybe $152,000 or something, but they supported us on catching up the index.
And so Dialogue used that grant more than the first one for justification of saying we've got a public database here.
Neither one of those grants were for our automated systems. The chemical titles grant was for producing a computer-based publication. The catch-up on our indexing, collective indexes, was just to catch up on that index. The grants NSF started, and right out here in this parking lot, Don Horning, chemist, President Science Advisor, in June 4, 1965, helped us dedicate this building. And he announced at that meeting that Defense Department, NIH, and NSF were going to give us $2 million grants to start our automation processes, primarily then for our registry system, but that was for overall automation. So Dialogue, of course, knew that. He had the people, they were well aware of the money that was used for development of our automation processes here, starting in 1965.
Yeah. How was the suit finally resolved?
It was what do you call it, when companies decide out of court, settled out of court, neither party admits guilt. So it was settled out of court by Massey. I testified down there a couple of days in Washington on preliminary hearings, but it was settled out of court. Neither party won. No money exchange.
Only the lawyers got rich.
$2 million.
That's what CAS paid? And Dialogue Lobby paid equally amount, equal
yes.
amount.
Yes.
Well, why don't we take a little break and let the stretch.
Good. I need a snack. I've got a diet.
We're rolling.
Your money we're using.
One of the things that struck me in looking at the history of CAS and your writings and such was how, to use a popular term these days, how synergistic Kim Abstract's database became, so that from it came all kinds of byproducts and interactions, like with the biology people, the medicine people, and on and on. Was this planned? Was this occurring over time? How did this happen?
I think our visions for the future brought it about. Obviously, when you get, well, not only our research, but our people here are suggesting ideas. Our chemists on our staff always have ideas for things that could be done, and they would submit them to our marketing group. One of the things we set up early was a market research, see what was needed and wanted out there for use, more efficient and effective use of information in chemistry. So we would, and internally, of course, all of our editors were scientifically trained, and they like to do research in their mind as well as mental or physical. And so I think by coordinating and cooperating and getting the minds of our staff to work together to achieve common goals on our research and development projects as well as our market research needs. ACS had never been marketing oriented. We thought back in those periods in the 50s and before that CA was used as a Bible in research and development, and it would sell itself. And it did for many years, of course. But then, I'll never forget, I came back, I had a board of directors in the 60s. One of the board members, Bob Cairns, particularly from Hercules, said, "Dale, you got to get your marketing people lined up so that you can meet the market needs." We really hadn't been developing that technique or group of people at all. And I hired out of Philadelphia area a market research man that came in for a year and a half and presented to the board of directors in 1965. I'll never forget it, our first marketing plan was in 1965, and we had charted each year what we could do in producing new publications and services out of our computer-based system. And the board of directors looked at our marketing plan and told us, especially Milton Harris, Dr. Harris, took over as chairman of the board in 1967, he said that you have too many new products coming on the market each year. He said even General Electric wouldn't have that many new publications and services. We had really a lot of ideas and a lot of projects to develop a lot of different out of one database. Mm-hmm. Actually, you can do unlimited publications and services. But we probably were trying to bite off more than what we chewed, and he probably was right. At the St. Regis Hotel in New York City, he and got Fred Tate and me together. He said, you can't, even though we'd presented it to the board committee on CAS and then to the full board, we gave them copies of this. So I'm sure it was just a matter of combination of techniques, people internal recommendations as to what could be done to meet the market research needs for information, and also our internal research and development staff. I think probably because there wasn't any of these new types of services available in the market, most of it came out of the internal suggestions for mm-hmm. new publications and services.
Well, while that's an advantage to CAS, it must not make the competition real happy to see like biology, like BIOSIS. Now, you seem to have a cooperative arrangement with them, but they must have felt some sense of competition with you at the same time.
Hey, you have very good perception to ask that question. As I told you, Miles Conrad, the director of Biological Abstracts, was a good friend of mine. We used to take trips together to international meetings of UPA. And then his successor was Phyllis Parkins, who also came a very good... And we got started under Phyllis, a cooperative project. We were having difficulty in getting taxonomic names straight. There are about 10 million taxonomic names, I think. And we had a man or two on our staff that could handle the taxonomic names. But they're just starting a registry system for taxonomic names. Anyhow, we sat down together each 6 months with the Biological Abstracts people, and yes, they did feel as though there was competition. There was major competition because biologists and biochemists then, and still do, use chemical abstracts probably more than what they use biological abstracts. We have bigger commercial market for CAS than what biology did. We were also competing with physics abstracts and nuclear abstracts and other of the in here in America. But I got agreements with the biology people, particularly working together so that we'd provide them with the names and registry numbers for our chemical compounds. They were seeing gone through their systems a lot of chemical compounds that they didn't know how to handle, and so we would send tapes back and forth to cooperate. I think all of the major services in America were looking at competition, the scientific societies, physics, mathematics, and
but
we were all competing.
But at in-face meetings, they weren't saying, here comes Dale Baker who's ruining our market.
They resented chemical abstracts. You said deep pockets earlier. I don't like that. We were about 10 times the budgets of the other abstracting services. I could give you a chart of all the in-face. You could get it out of the offices over there in Washington way back, in Philadelphia, in-face headquarters. Each year they put out a listing of all the abstracting services in our volume. Each year a number of papers covered in science and technology. That's probably, if you haven't seen it, the list. It just came out, I believe, in April. A list of all the abstracting and indexing Intelligence Services, the Information Services in America, and members of it face their production each year. And there was a lot of meetings. I was, Miles Conrad was the first president, I was the second president, and Dr. Burton Atkinson told us at a meeting in Cleveland, Ohio, when Case Western Reserve University, Alan Kent, James Perry, and Madeline Berry had gotten Hubert Humphrey to discuss a $100 million a year contract to develop an abstracting indexing service for an information service for all of science and technology. And the headlines on the Cleveland Plain Dealer that year in 60 was that Hubert Humphrey spoke to us over video, telephone video at that time in 1960, that what they needed to do was to build it, the Case Western Reserve, which was a proposition by Perry, Kent, and Berry, to $100 million a year information service so that we can provide scientists and engineers in this country.
With one humongous system, right. We need to stop and change the